Thank you, Mr. Pavlik. And a warm afternoon welcome to everyone here, everyone on the webcast, and hopefully my wife Linda Henderson's able to join us on the webcast today. She asked me to say hi to everybody from her. What better way to do it just to say it once rather than, you know, 40 times? Hi from Linda, everyone. You know, during the 13-week COVID-19 lockdown, one hymn was sung repeatedly during the headquarters webcasts. It almost kind of became an anthem of encouragement, and that was hymn number 44, God is Our Refuge. You're likely very familiar with its words, God is our refuge. How it goes, you know how that continues to go. You sing it over and over. It's very familiar because we've sung it for years. But one of the risks of becoming very familiar with a hymn is that we can slip into autopilot, singing it without really focusing on the words. For an example, God is our refuge. Wait a minute. Did I remember to turn off the coffee pot this morning? In straits of present, what should I fix for dinner tonight? We don't want to go there. We want to focus on the words of this hymn. And my hope is that after this message, you'll never sing this hymn again on autopilot. Hymn 44, God is Our Refuge, is derived from the first five verses of Psalm 46. And on one level, Psalm 46 certainly can be viewed as just a general message of encouragement, applicable at any time, including right now. Yet Psalm 46 is much more than just general encouragement for daily lives. As we're going to delve into Psalm 46, I think you're going to see that it's deeply prophetic. First, it focuses on a powerful message, a message of prophecy and of encouragement for God's people at the very end of the age, this age of Satan's and man's misrule on the earth, a time of distress such as never before been seen on earth, as Jesus explained in Matthew 24, verses 21 through 22. Might some of us even see those times? The younger you are, the greater the odds are that you might actually see these times. Then Psalm 46, after giving that powerful message of prophecy for the end times, the very end times, shifts to the good news that follows that terrifying time. So let's go to Psalm 46. And we're going to examine it in detail. Without reading it, we're just going to scan, let your eyes run down the page, and you'll notice at the end of verse 3, at the end of verse 7, and the end of verse 11, there's the word Selah, S-E-L-A-H. Now, according to the Nelson Study Bible, Selah is generally considered by most scholars to be some sort of a form of musical notation, possibly a marker of an interlude, a pause, or a little speculative on their part, maybe a change of key. Psalm 46 appears to be in the form of a song divided into three stanzas or verses. And all three of these stanzas are very forward-looking in time. So here's a quick review before we get into the detail. Stanza number one from verses 1 through 3. We're going to see stanza number one contains that prophetic message to God's people at the very time of the end. Stanza number two, from verses 4 through 7, jumps forward from the end time, further into the future, and examines the time of God's settled rule on the earth. Then stanza number three, from verses 8 through 11, takes that forward-looking point and looks backward at how his rule is set up. And it ends in verse 10 through 11 with encouragement that we need not worry despite what goes on around us, because Messiah's rulership is coming and will be established. So with that summary, let's dig into it. We'll start with stanza number 1, verses 1 through 3. We'll read them very quickly. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, even though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though its waters roar and be troubled, and the mountains shake with its swelling. Selah. The word refuge in verse 1 appears 3 times in this psalm. It appears in verse 1, verse 7, and again in verse 11. In the Bible, when something is repeated, it's generally there to demonstrate its importance to us. Some who examine, we're not into numerology, but those who look at the significance of numbers in the Bible view the number 3 as signifying a level of completion. Maybe not quite to the degree of perfection of the level 7, but it's important. So refuge runs throughout this psalm. The word translated in the New King James and King James Version as refuge in the Hebrew is rendered by the Good News Version as shelter. The New Century Version renders it as protection. The Bible in Basic English puts it as harbor. And for someone who has a maritime background, that word is very important. A harbor is a place inland, sheltered from the sea, where vessels can go to be safe from a storm. That resonates with my maritime background. If you have a marker in your Bible, put it here in Psalm 46, because we're going to leave it many times, but we're going to constantly be coming back. So with your marker in place, let's go to Psalm 91 and look at verses 1 through 2. Psalm 91, verses 1 through 2. We're focusing still on the concept God is our refuge, our shelter, our protection, our safe harbor. Psalm 91, beginning in verse 1. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge, my fortress, my God. In Him I will trust. And if you were to continue reading through Psalm 91, you will see the theme that things can get very bad, but he who trusts in the eternal has a special refuge, a special protection, a special fortress in which he can retreat and be safe. So let's go back now to Psalm 46. Still in verse 1, there's the phrase, He's a very present help in trouble. That's in the New King James Version. The New Living Translation explains it this way. Always ready to help in times of trouble. The Common English Bible renders it a help always near in time of great trouble. We can rely on God to shelter and protect us. Now we move to verses 2 and 3, and here's where it gets prophetic. Because the reference is to mountains be cast into the seas, waters roaring, mountains shake from the swelling of the oceans. The word translated removed in verse 2, the earth be removed. In this context, the Hebrew word means changed, literally changed. And the Bible in Basic English puts it this way, though the earth is changed. The New English Translation, for this reason we do not fear when the earth shakes and the mountains tumble into the depths of the seas. Young's literal translation renders it this way. Therefore, we fear not in the changing of earth and in the slipping of mountains into the heart of the seas. Now, is that just like poetic license? Just sort of a poet's way of saying, well, if things get bad, Well, that's possibly one way to look at it. But given the overall thrust of this entire psalm as being prophetic, these phrases in verses 2 and 3 about mountains being carried into the sea and oceans roaring most likely are prophetic. Now, the Bible doesn't seem to record events quite like this as having happened in the past. Now, even Noah's flood, the great flood of Noah's time described in Genesis 7, didn't involve events quite like this. Certainly lots of water, lots of rain, water coming up from the depths of the earth, but not this shaking of the earth, this violent vibration and mountains falling into the sea. Those events, however, are prophesied as part of end time occurrences. Let's look at some of those to see this forward-looking aspect of Psalm 46. Events that will occur near the time of the end. Isaiah chapter 24, verse 1. Isaiah 24, verse 1. Behold, the Lord makes the earth empty and makes it waste, distorts its surface, and scatters abroad its inhabitants. Now down to verses 4 through 6. The earth mourns and fades away. The world languishes and fades away. The haughty people of the earth languish. The earth is also defiled under its inhabitants because they have transgressed the laws, changed the ordinance, broken the everlasting covenant. Therefore, the curse has devoured the earth, and those who dwell in it are desolate. Therefore, the inhabitants of the earth are burned, and few men are left. Now, verses 17 through 21. This is all describing God's impending judgment on the earth. And it's in advance a description of what will happen. Verse 17 through 21. Fear. And the pit and the snare are upon you, O inhabitants of the earth. And it shall be that he who flees from the noise of the fear shall fall into the pit. And he who comes up from the midst of the pit shall be caught in the snare. For the windows from on high are open, and the foundations of the earth are shaken. The earth is violently broken. The earth is split open. The earth is shaken exceedingly. The earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard and shall totter like a hut. Its transgression shall be heavy upon it, and it shall fall and not rise again. It shall come to pass in that day that the Lord will punish on high the host of exalted ones and on the earth the kings of the earth. This is describing an absolutely terrifying times that are coming on the earth. And there's more. Revelation chapter 6, verses 12 through 17. Revelation 6, 12 through 17. This is describing the sixth seal. You'll recall in overview, the timeline of those end times of events are described in the Bible as dealing with seven seals. The seventh seal is subdivided into seven trumpets. The seventh trumpet is subdivided into seven last plagues, referred to as bowls, where God's wrath is poured out on the earth. This is part of the sixth seal. Verses 12 through 17 of chapter 6. And I looked when he opened the sixth seal, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became like blood, and the stars of heaven fell to the earth, as a fig tree drops its late figs when it's shaken by a mighty wind. Then the sky receded as a scroll when it's rolled up, and every mountain and island was moved out of its place. And the kings of the earth, the great men, the rich men, the commanders, the mighty men, every slave and every free man, hid themselves in the caves and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, "Fall on us and hide us from the throne, from the face of him who sits on the throne, and from the wrath of God of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath has come, and who is able to stand?" We don't know exactly how these events are going to be played out on the Earth, but there are some intriguing scientific possibilities that describe what we've just read here in Revelation 6. One possibility involves either a comet or a very major asteroid coming into Earth's atmosphere. And the thing is, when those large celestial objects come in, as they go through our atmosphere, increasing friction produces a massive amount of heat, and typically the smaller objects explode in the atmosphere. The larger objects may partially explode, but make it all the way down to the Earth. And there are potentially important events that occur with this. This massive heating and the explosion of these objects coming through the Earth, and they have happened in the past, it's geologically shown where they have hit Earth, you get a massive shock wave that goes out. And it can involve heat, it can involve pressure changes, it can involve wind, and it can even trigger earthquakes, depending on the size of the object and what it does when it hits the Earth. It can explode clouds of debris into the air that can blot out the sun, that can keep light from penetrating through the dust. And one of the side effects downstream of that sort of thing, for those who survive the blast and the potential effect, great cold because of the sun not able to get its heat through the dust shell that comes down. Another possibility is a solar micronova. There are those who believe that of the many cycles of the sun, micronovas occur on roughly a 12,000 year cycle. We've got good evidence in science that 12,000 years ago there was a solar micronova that drastically affected the Earth and the magnetic shield, involved a reversal of the Earth's magnetic poles. There was one 24,000 years ago. There was another one 36,000 years ago. And they have names like the Gothenburg event, things like that. Science talks in terms that match what the Bible describes. With a solar micronova, the sun basically partially explodes and shoots out a massive dust shell. That dust shell, when it hits the planets, can affect the planets in so many ways, depending on the strength. It can blow off part of the atmosphere, and you can get a mighty rushing wind as the atmosphere gets partially blown out, and you've got a lower pressure on the side of the Earth facing the sun, and all of this wind from the Earth circles around to try to equalize the pressure. You get massive winds, you get geomagnetic reversal, and you can trigger the upper crust with magnetic and electrical currents that go through that can even involve shaking and rearranging of the crust. There are many speculative things. We don't know for sure precisely how these are going out. And I don't have a memo from God explaining exactly how he's going to do it. But these are possibilities. And those scientific possibilities match the biblical explanation. But wait, there's more. If you'll go to Revelation chapter 8, verses 8 through 13. Revelation 8, 8 through 13. This is describing the second, third, and fourth trumpets. Then the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. Think back of Psalm 46. Though the hills be shaken and mountains be cast into the sea, here it's being described. And a third of the sea became blood. Verse 9. And a third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. Then the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch. And it fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. The name of the star is Wormwood. A third of the waters became wormwood. Wormwood is a type of a poison almost. And many men died from the water because it was made bitter. Verse 12. Then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened. A third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. And I looked, and I heard an angel flying through the midst of the heaven, saying with a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because of the remaining blasts of the trumpets, the trumpet of the three angels who were about to sound." This sounds very similar to some of the descriptions we've already reviewed. Scientifically, could this be the effect of a major asteroid hitting the Earth? Possibly. A micronova, solar micronova dust shell hitting the Earth, drastically affecting the Earth? Possibly. Supervolcano, which also can spew material up into the air, in the upper atmosphere, that completely changes our climate, it certainly can happen. Revelation 16, verse 17 through 21, another similar time period, a similar description of tremendously scary events on this earth. Revelation 16, verses 17 through 21. This describes the seventh bowl plague, which is part of the wrath of God. Then the seventh angel poured out his bowl into the air, and a loud voice came out of the temple of heaven from the throne, saying, "It is done." And there were noises and thunderings and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such a mighty and great earthquake as had not occurred since men were on the earth. This is scary stuff. Now the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. And great Babylon was remembered before God to give her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. Then every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. And great hail from heaven fell upon men, each hailstone about the weight of a talent. Men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, since the plague was exceedingly great. These end times events described in our Bible involve absolutely frightening times on the earth. And God's people will still be on the earth. Back to Revelation 12. We'll read verses 13 through 17. Revelation 12, verses 17 through 13. I've got a misprint, 13 through 17. Now when the dragon, referring to Satan, saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. We understand that the woman is referring to the church. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she's nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. So the serpent spewed out his mouth, like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by that flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Notice the number of references to things occurring on the earth. The earth helps the woman. The woman flees to her place in the wilderness. There's no reference to this fictional rapture. God's people are not taken off the earth to be looking down from heaven to watch these events. They're somewhere on the earth. We don't know where. We don't know how. But we can rest assured God says he will protect his people. Many will be protected. Much of the church, we expect, will be protected, although some may not. And it may be for God's own purpose that some will not be in that place of safety. That's his choice. It's up to him. But it's important that no matter what, we keep the commandments of God and follow him. So we see, if you just flip back to Revelation 3 and verse 10, this is referring to the church of the messages of the church is, this one is to Philadelphia. Jesus is speaking, because you have kept my command to persevere, I will also keep you from the hour of trial, which shall come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. The promise is there. So let's go back to Psalm 46. Having reviewed these additional prophecies, we can see now that even though the mountains be carried into the sea, the sea's waters be troubled, that the mountains shake, that they tremble with the swelling of the sea and the events that are occurring, we will not fear. We need not fear. God is our refuge and our strength. Regardless of where God's people are, as these events unfold, a paraphrase of Psalm 46 tells us, God is our refuge, our shelter, our safe harbor from the storms. He is our strength and helper, always at hand, no matter how terrible the shaking of the earth and the end time events become. Now let's move to stanza 2 of Psalm 46. This is verses 4 through 6, or 4 through 7. Let's read verse 4 and 5. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacle of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her just at the break of dawn. This is forward-looking. We've moved beyond the end-time events of stanza number 1, and now the rule of Messiah is established on the earth. And it refers in verse 4, there's a river whose streams make glad the city of our God. Other prophecies dovetail with the prophetic portions of Psalm 46. Let's go to Zechariah 14, verses 8 through 9. Zechariah 14, 8 through 9. In that day, it shall be that living waters shall flow from Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea and half toward the western sea. In both summer and winter it shall occur, and the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day it shall be, the Lord is one, and his name is one. This refers to a river flowing out of Jerusalem, just as we saw in stanza 2 of Psalm 46. While we're still, let's go out to the book of Ezekiel, chapter 47, where a similar prophecy was revealed to Ezekiel. You'll remember Ezekiel was a Jewish captive in exile in Babylon, and he was given a vision, many visions, but one of the visions was of a rebuilt Jerusalem and a rebuilt temple. Ezekiel 47, verses 1 through 12. Very similar to what we read about a river in the city of God. Then he brought me back to the door of the temple, and there was water flowing from under the threshold of the temple toward the east, for the front of the temple faced east. The water was flowing from under the right side of the temple, south of the altar. He brought me out by the way of the north gate and led me around to the outside of the outer gateway that faces east, and there was water running out of the out on the right side. And when the man, that man was an angel, went out to the east with a line in his hand, he measured 1,000 cubits, and he brought me through the water. The water came up to my ankles. And he measured 1,000, and he brought me to the waters, and the water came up to my knees. And he measured 1,000 and brought me through. The water came up to my waist. And he measured 1,000, and it was a river that I could not cross, for the water was too deep, water in which one must swim, a river that could not be crossed. He said to me, "Son of man, have you seen this?" Then he brought me and returned me to the bank of the river. When I returned there along the bank of the river, there were very many trees on one side and the other. Then he said to me, "This water flows toward the eastern region, goes down into the valley and enters the sea. When it reaches the sea, its waters are healed. And it shall be that every living thing that moves, wherever the rivers go, will live. There will be a very great multitude of fish, because these waters go there, for they will be healed, and everything will live wherever the river goes. Despite the destruction on the planet from the end time, the established rule of Messiah will see healing of the earth." And continue in verse 10. "It shall be that fishermen will stand by it from En-Gedi to Eglaim, and they will be there will be places for spreading their nets. Their fish will be of the same kinds as the fish of the great sea, exceedingly many. But its swamps and marshes will not be healed. They will be given over to salt. Along the bank of the river, on this side and that, will grow all kinds of trees used for food. Their leaves will not wither, and their fruit will not fail. They will bear fruit every month because their water flows from the sanctuary. Their fruit will be for food, and their leaves for medicine." The water that flows, the river in the city of our God, as we read in Psalm 46, the second stanza, will heal everything it touches. Go to Zechariah 14, verses 8 through 9. Zechariah 14, 8 through 9, which also touches on this healing river. "And in that day it shall be that living waters shall flow from Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea and half toward the western sea. In both summer and winter it shall occur. And the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day it shall be, the Lord is one and his name is one." Back to Psalm 46. You've got your marker in place. We were reading in verses 4 and 5 about this river in the city of God. And it says in verse 5, God is in the midst of her. God is in the midst of her. God will actually be there in the form. Now, the word God here is from the Hebrew Elohim. It is a uniplural noun. It can either be singular or plural. But we know that the Messiah will reign on the earth, but so will those who've been resurrected in the first resurrection. They will become part of the Elohim family, and Elohim will be on the earth. So, with the actual presence of the Elohim on the earth, let's go to Ezekiel 43, verses 1 through 7. Ezekiel 43, 1 through 7. Part of Ezekiel's vision of the temple, afterward he brought me to the gate, and the gate that faces toward the east. And behold, the glory of the God of Israel came from the way of the east. His voice was like the sound of many waters, and the earth shone with his glory. It was like the appearance of the vision which I saw, like the vision when I saw when I came to destroy the city. The visions were like the vision which I saw by the river Kibar, and I fell on my face. And the glory of the Lord came into the temple by way of the east gate, or by the way of the gate which faces toward the east. The Spirit lifted me up and brought me into the inner court, and behold, the glory of the Lord filled the temple. Then I heard him speaking to me from the temple, while a man stood beside me. And he said to me, "Son of man, this is the place of my throne and the place of the soles of my feet, when I will dwell in the midst of the children of Israel forever. No more shall the house of Israel defile my holy name, they nor their kings by their harlotry or by with the carcasses of their kings on their high places. There are quite a number of other scriptures, which for sake of time we won't turn to, but jot these down to look also, that tell us Jesus Christ will be on earth. God will be on earth. Zechariah 2, verses 1 through 5. That's Zechariah 2, verses 1 through 5, and verses 10 through 12. And Zechariah 8, verse 3. So let's go back now to Psalm 46. In verse 5, we've seen how God will be present in the midst of her. And then it goes on, she shall not be moved. This city will no longer be moved or shaken. We're told that also in the book of Zephaniah, Zephaniah 3, verses 14 through 17. Zephaniah 3, 14 through 17. Sing, O daughter of Zion, shout, O Israel, be glad and rejoice with all your heart, O daughter of Jerusalem. The Lord has taken away your judgments. He has cast out your enemy. The King of Israel, the Lord, is in your midst. Another reference to God being there. You shall see disaster no more. You'll see disaster no more. Echoes of what we read in Psalm 46. The city will not be shaken. So let's go back to Psalm 46 and read verses 6 through 7. The nations raged. The kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice. The earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Verse 6 tells us it doesn't matter what mankind does or how it protests when Christ returns. His rule will be established. And verse 7 gives us words of comfort and encouragement. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Now let's move on to stanza number 3 of Psalm 46. Verses 8 and 9. From this time perspective, you'll see that this is looking back, and verses 8 through 9 explain to us how Messiah establishes his reign on the earth. Come, behold the works of the Lord, who has made desolations in the earth. He makes wars cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two. He burns the chariot in the fire. He enforces his law on mankind. Warring mankind will not be able to continue. Let's go to Zechariah 14, verses 1 through 4, as we see another prophetic picture of how Messiah enforces his rule. Zechariah 14, verses 1 through 4. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, and your spoil will be divided in your midst. For I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem. The city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished. Half of the city shall go into captivity. Bad times at the end. But the remnant of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as he fights in the day of battle. And in that day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from east to west, making a very large valley. Half of the mountain shall move toward the north and half toward the south. Now, verses 12 through 14. Here's another description of how he intervenes. And this shall be the plague with which the Lord will strike all the people who fight against Jerusalem. They want to fight against him. He fights back. and with overwhelming power. Their flesh shall dissolve while they stand on their feet. Their eyes shall dissolve in their sockets, and their tongues shall dissolve in their mouths. It shall come to pass in that day that a great panic from the Lord will be among them. Everyone will seize the hand of his neighbor and raise his hand against his neighbor's hand. Judah also will fight at Jerusalem, and the wealth of the surrounding nations shall be gathered together, gold, silver, and apparel in great abundance. His power will be overwhelming. Go also to Revelation 19. We'll read verses 11 through 21. Revelation 19, 11 through 21. Another visionary approach to the return of Jesus Christ and how he established his rule. Revelation 19, 11 through 21. Now I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on him was called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he judges and makes war. Doesn't do any good for humankind to try to fight the returning Jesus Christ. His eyes were like the flame of fire, and on his head were many crowns. He had a name written that no one knew except himself. He was clothed with a robe dipped in blood, and his name is called the Word of God. And the armies in heaven, clothed in fine linen, white and clean, followed him on white horses. Now out of his mouth goes a sharp sword, that he should strike the nations, and he himself will rule them with a rod of iron. He himself treads the winepress of the fierceness and the wrath of the Almighty God. And he has on his robe and on his thigh a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Then I saw an angel descending in the sun, and he cried out with a loud voice, saying to all the birds that fly in the midst of heaven, come and gather together for the supper of the great God, that you may eat the kings of flesh, the flesh of captains, the flesh of mighty men and of those who sat on them, and the flesh of all people, free and slave, both small and great. And I saw the beast, the kings of the earth, and their armies gathered together to make war against him who sat on the throne, or sat on the horse, and against his army. Then the beast was captured, with him the false prophet, who worked signs in his presence by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were cast alive into the lake of fire burning with brimstone, and the rest were killed by the sword which proceeded from the mouth of him who sat on the horse, and all the birds were filled with their flesh. He will make war. His war machine will be irresistible, no matter what the nations do. We don't turn there for sake of time, but jot down to take a look at Zephaniah chapter 1, verse 7 and verses 14 through 18. Zephaniah 1, verse 7 and verses 14 through 18. Now we're about to wrap it up, so let's go back to the concluding section of Psalm 46. We've seen how the Messiah establishes his rule, and now we come to verses 10 through 11. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. So we're ending now with encouragement. In verse 11, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. He tells us his rulership is coming. He is with us now, and he will be our refuge until his kingdom is established. So as we look back on what we've seen here in Psalm 46, we've seen that it's a deeply prophetic psalm with a special message of encouragement for God's people at the very end of this present evil age. Could be even some of us that are receiving that message of encouragement. It encourages them that God will see them through the most difficult times mankind has ever or ever will experience on the earth. God will be a refuge, a place of shelter, a safe harbor in a storm, and his presence and peaceful rule on the earth is assured. Prophetically, It's a done deal. And that end time prophetic message of Psalm 46 can kind of bring us back full circle to today. If God is powerful enough and reliable enough to shelter his people during the most horrendous times that mankind will ever experience, times that are much worse than anything we're going through now, we can be confident that he is powerful enough and reliable enough to be a refuge for us today, here and now in our daily lives. Ultimately, Psalm 46 is dual in its application. It is a message of encouragement for God's people at the end of the age, and it also is a powerful message of encouragement for us right now in our daily lives and our daily trials. Whenever hymn number 44 is sung, please be mindful of that hymn's powerful message. The hymn, God is our refuge. Don't just sing it on autopilot. Engage with its words. God is our refuge and our strength.